Rajan. Dehat. From the body of the mother. Deyaha. Another body. Abhijayate. Takes birth. Vijat. From one seed. Eva. Indeed. Yata. Just as. Vijam. Another seed. Dehi. A person who has accepted a material body. Artaha. The material elements. Eva. Like. Shachvataha. Eternal. So translation. As from one seed, another seed is generated. O king, so from one body, the body of the father, through another body, the body of the mother, a third body is generated, the body of a son. As the elements of the material body are eternal, the living entity who appears through these material elements is also eternal. So you can repeat. As from one seed, another seed is generated. O king. So from one body, the body of the father, through another body, the body of the mother, a third body is generated, the body of the son. As the elements of the material body are eternal, the living entity who appears through these material elements is also eternal. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. From Bhagavad Gita we understand that there are two energies, namely the superior energy and inferior energy. Inferior energy consists of the five gross and three subtle material elements. The living entity who represents the superior energy appears in different types of bodies through these elements by the manipulation or supervision of the material energy. Actually, both the material and spiritual energies, matter and spirit, exist eternally as potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The potent entity is the Supreme Person, since the spiritual energy of the living being, who is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, desires to enjoy this material world, the Lord gives him a chance to accept different types of material bodies and enjoy or suffer in different material conditions. Factually, the spiritual energy the living entity desires to enjoy material things is manipulated by the Supreme Lord. The so-called father and mother have nothing to do with the living entity. As a result of his own choice and karma, the living being takes different bodies through the agency of so-called fathers and mothers. So dehena dehino rajan deha deho bijayate bijadeva yata bijam deyarta eva shashvataha. So om ganata vidandasha vidanjana shlakaya chakshur miritam yena tasmai shri gurvena maha. Vishnu Shakti Para Prata Shikyakyata Tapara Avidikarma Sangaya Kutira Shakti Ishite. So this is a description, this verse I just quoted, is a description of the Shaktis of Vishnu, or the Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's a very interesting discussion about Shaktis and the Supreme Lord and Mayavad philosophy in the Jiva Dharma. And there's different, there's Parinam Vada, Vivarta Vada. We're going to describe what those terms mean. Of course, Vivarta means illusion. And of course, on the other hand, there's actually a transcendental illusion that one has under Yoga Maya, and that is part of loving Krishna. And Jagannanda Panda describes this in the Prema Vivarta. The illusion of prema. Because one is put onto Yogamaya and one forgets that Krishna is God and just one relates in a very intimate way. But as far as the descriptions in the Jiva Dharma are concerned, the Mayavadis, they have several different philosophies. One is what's called Vivarta Vada, which means that Brahman somehow or other fell into Maya. Just to put it simply, you know, you have the Brahman, everything's Brahman, sarva kalp idam Brahman. That's one of the primary shlokas of the Mayavadis. They have several ones, you know, ham Brahmasmi, what is it, and you are that, and I forget the exact Sanskrit for that. But in any case, and so they say that everything is Brahman, and Brahman is an illusion, and that's why we think we're here, basically. Or we see the variegatedness in the world, or even there is we to see the variegatedness in the world. It's all one, Brahman. So what they don't explain with that Vivarta Vada is that how did Brahman fall into illusion? Because then you would have illusion as a separate a separate energy that could overcome Brahman, and then Brahman wouldn't be Brahman anymore, because actually the word Brahman means the greatest. Means the highest or the greatest. Like even the word Brahma means basically, it's a name of God. Even though it's used traditionally as a name for Lord Brahma, but it means the greatest in the universe, basically. So in other words, so for Brahman to be in Maya, there would have to be Maya to put him in Maya. And that means that Maya would be Brahman rather than Brahman being Brahman. Because Maya would be superior to Brahman, and there would be two energies anyway, and there wouldn't be one in any case. Is that clear? So, and then there's another Mayavad philosophy called, it's a type of Parinam, Vad, which means basically that Brahman becomes transformed. You know, there's one Brahman and he becomes transformed. That's also another variety in Mayavad philosophy. So, we don't believe in that. We in the Vaishnava tradition believe in what's called Shakti Parinam. That means the Brahman's energies are transformed. Or they manifest in different ways. It's not the Brahman, like Krishna is never transformed. Let's give a practical quote from the Vedic literatures to verify that. Om Purnamadam Purnamidam Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnameva Vishishate. And that verse, of course, from the Isupanishad, which we described on Sunday, was one of the main Upanishads that's considered bona fide in Rajasiplic succession, because it's been passed down to Siplic succession. That the Supreme Lord doesn't come transformed. He emanates his energies, but guess what? He remains the Supreme Whole. Even though so many complete units emanate from the complete whole, he remains complete, and the units remain complete in and of themselves. So in other words, the energies of the Lord, they get transformed into different ways. That's called Shakti Parinam. But Brahman Parinam we don't accept. Is that clear? We don't accept Brahman Vivarta. We don't, Brahman is an illusion either. But we accept it, the Jiva Vivarta. That we're an illusion, the Jiva souls are an illusion. Okay, it's a little technical. I don't want to get too technical in class. But in any case, these are some of the different points here. So, getting back to this verse, Vishnu Shakti Para Prapyata, Shetragya Kedata, Paravidyakarma Sangidya, Tatir Shakti Ishate. The Vishnu has basically three varieties of potencies or energies. Paraprakriti. The Paraprakriti is the transcendental energy of the Lord, in other words, the spiritual world, which is manifest by the Lord, actually by Baladeva, the Sandini Shakti, and also other aspects of the spiritual world are just like the Ladini Shakti and Samvit, potency of the Supreme Lord. And Paraprakriti, Vishnu Shakti Paraprakriti, Kshetra Gyakyata Tapara. And the living entity is known as Kshetragya. And Kshetragya, that means the knower of the field. And that's talked about in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which we're going to talk a little bit about later on in class. The living entity is also Tata Para. He's also transcendental. It's not just that the spiritual energy, the spiritual world, and Krishna, and you know the gopis and everything like that are transcendental. We're transcendental too, but we're Anu. We're very, very small. We're Tatashta. Tatashta means on the border. And we gave the example the other day, just like the seashore, the sand on the beach or whatever, is right on the border between the water and the land. So sometimes it's in water and sometimes it's not. And if there's a hurricane, guess what happens? The whole thing gets washed away. Just like I was recently on the Gulf Coast visiting some of our restaurants and temples there. And they were explaining to me that during a hurricane, I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago or so, or it was Katrina several years ago, that the whole shore got washed away. There was no sand there anymore. The whole beach, there was no beach. And so what the Army Corps of Engineers did, which is, you know, to satisfy the whims of the enjoyers in America, is that they would take these barges out and they suck the sand, or the, it's not sand at that point, but you know, anyway, what's under the sea, and they suck it and they put it back where the beach was. And then there's this big, wide beach there, nice sandy soil on the beach, by the mercy of the Army Corps of Engineers. But anyway, so that's the Tatashta Shakti. So just like the sand sometimes gets washed away for many years, so sometimes we get washed away by Krishna's material energy for many eons. Brahmanda Brahmata Konna Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Vai Bhakti Lata Beach, until we come in contact with a pure devotee who gives us the seed of the creeper of devotion. So that's us, Kshetragya. And it's interesting. Sometimes you find descriptions in the Jivadharma describes that the living entities are manifest, become manifest by the Tatashta Shakti. But then the question is raised, does that mean the living entities never existed at one point and then came into existence? But that's really looking at things through material vision. You know, because we, being in the material world, see everything in terms of time. So when we hear it, you know, the spiritual world is manifest by Baladev, you know, the Samvit, I'm sorry, not the Samvit. Samvit is actually the knowledge potency of the Lord. Baladev manifests the spiritual world, but then we think, oh, it happened at some time, or the living entity was manifested some, but it's not. These are all eternal things. I mean, it's very hard for us to understand eternity or infinity. I remember when I was studying mathematics in the university, they would just have this 8 that was on its side that indicated infinity. Remember that? Because you just keep going around. So that indicates infinity. And it's just, it was a concept that was impossible to understand. Of course, mathematically, you could somewhat deal with it. For example, if you had 5 divided by 0, that was an infinite number. I mean, how many times does 0 go into 5? Infinitely. So there was some, it's interesting in mathematics, you can understand some of these concepts a little better than you can just using common sense. You know, material common sense, isn't it? Mathematics. So anyway, so infinity, the living entity, even though it's described that he becomes manifest from the Tatashta Shakti or the spiritual world, is manifest in the Sandini prophecy with Lord Balaram, then it's always there. It's always there. So it's not, we shouldn't see things through the our material concept of time. Okay. So avidya karma, so then the third energy is called avidya karma sanganya, is known as avidya karma, that means ignorant activities. And that's Krishna's illusory energy. But actually Krishna's illusory energy, talking about parinambada, is a transformation of Krishna's internal potency. You know, Krishna's internal potency doesn't, when I talk about transformed, it's not that it's changed in shape. That you have Krishna's internal potency, like the Ladini, Samvit, Sandini potency, and that manifests as the, in the material world, as the external potency of the Lord, in the same way that Krishna manifests as Lord Shiva in the material world. He expands as Lord Shiva. It's not exactly the same, but it's the same. But it's an expansion of Krishna in special categories. So anyway, it's a little interesting. So we said we were going to talk about the Kshetragya, who is the living entity. Kshetragyaka Tathapara, who's also transcendental. So the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is such an interesting chapter. It's called Nature, the Enjoyer, and the Consciousness. And many devotees struggle with understanding that particular chapter. It's quite an easy chapter. And I'm going to try to summarize what goes on in that chapter in accordance with this verse here. That in this chapter, the Kshetragya, but actually two Kshetragyas are described. In the verse I quoted from the Vishnu Purana about the three energies of the Lord, there's only one Kshetragyaka described, which is the living entity. But in the 13th chapter of the Gita, you have Krishna and the living entity being described as the Kshetragya. Kshetragya means basically the knower of the field. So what is the field being described in the Bhagavad Gita? The field being described in the Bhagavad Gita is the material body as far as we are concerned. So we're the, actually, in one sense, we could say we're the knower of the field, but if we're in an illusion, we don't really know the field. I mean, it's interesting how from one context the description is that because we experience everything through the body. I mean, for example, I'm not experiencing any of you or seeing any of you directly. I'm experiencing the body, actually. Does that make sense? See, I'm not, my vision of any of you is not really direct. It's the body, and actually the subtle body, is ultimately transmitting that information to the soul. Because you have Bhumi Rupa and Allah, that earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. And all these things are basically filtered through the false ego, too. Because when I see you, I think, you know, of course, let's say if I was an illusion, how can I exploit or enjoy that particular individual? It's like the material world, people are thinking, how can I, when they see someone else, you know, how can I enjoy, or if they feel disgusted with someone if they're extremely ugly or something, how can I avoid them to maximize my enjoyment? So in one sense, that's a type of Kshetragya, you know, where the knower, or what we know is from the body. But in a higher sense, one who actually is a real Kshetragya knows the difference between the body and the soul. So both contexts are mentioned in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as far as the living entity is concerned. And then you have Krishna, who is also mentioned as Kshetragya, because he knows everybody's body. Because he knows what's happening in every cell of everyone's body, in every atom of creation. So in one sense, his body, in terms of what's considered to be the universal form, he's the knower of that body. In other words, we're all within the universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I hope I'm not getting too philosophical. It's quite a bit to bore everybody. But I get excited with philosophy. Most people don't. Anyway, so So Krishna is the Kshetragya in a very, very large sense. And then he begins to describe in the Gita, which is in this 13th chapter of the Gita, how as this Kshetragya, or the knower, not only is he the knower, but he's also omnipresent and omnipotent. You know, the qualities of God are described in the 13th chapter of the Gita, because he describes how his arms and legs and eyes and different parts of the body are everywhere as the super soul. So then he describes his, he says, you know your body, but you really don't know your body, because you're in Maya. I'm paraphrasing it. He said, in one sense, you're the knower of the body, but you're not really the knower of the body, because you're in Maya. If you knew the body, you'd know that you're not the body. So it's interesting. I'm sort of giving a paraphrasing of what's happening in the 13th chapter of the Gita. And then he says something very interesting, that you're the one who's responsible for all your sufferings and enjoyments. The material nature is just like it's a mechanical thing, you know, it's lower of the karma and everything like that. The material nature is in charge of the actions and reactions. In other words, there's laws of nature. Sometimes devotees think they're above the laws of nature. Like, you know, why do I have to wear a seatbelt? Krishna will protect me. But why do I have to take vitamin D to prevent, you know, myself getting sick? Why do I have to get sunshine? Why do I have to exercise? Isn't it? But the material nature is coming from Krishna, and Krishna's written some material laws. He's the lawgiver. You know, like they tell about the law of gravity. What goes up must come down. Except when you become Krishna conscious, then you go up and you won't come down. But there's laws. It's not that you become Krishna conscious or a spiritualist or something like that, and then you can just disobey the ordinary laws of nature. You don't have to put oil in your car. You know, you don't have to change the oil every 3,000 or 6,000 miles. I mean, just like yesterday, we had to put air in our tires. It's not that Krishna made sure that there was air in my tires. I had to go to the tire place and just, I found out it was grossly underinflated. So, by the mercy of Gopal, of course. Because I had this little light on the dashboard and I couldn't understand, what does that light mean? He said, put the air in your tires. Anyway, so there's laws of nature. And we're responsible for how we interact with that causes our sufferings or enjoyments. And Krishna's making that point. You know, you're the Kshetragya, but you better be Kshetragya. You better know like that. And then Krishna emphasizes more how he is within everybody's body, but he's the enjoyer. Not you, buddy. If you're going to be the Kshetragya, to actually know the body, you should know that Krishna is the one who is supposed to enjoy. He says the transcendental enjoyer. You know, the super soul. So this, you know, the whole chapter is actually about the super soul. The super soul and the super soul's interactions with the soul and material energy, which is important. So he's the super enjoyer. And then Krishna says, if you understand this one point Krishna mentions in the Gita, you'll become liberated. Just understand that Krishna is the enjoyer, that material energy is just giving actions and reactions. You're the one who's responsible for your suffering for two reasons. One is you got the karmic reaction, you did something in the past. And number two is you're attached to the damn thing. Because even if you're not getting a karmic reaction, you're still going to suffer because you got a body. You know, let's say you don't have any bad karma. But still, just by the nature of being in a body, you know, it's suffering if you're attached to the body. So the whole point is, Krishna says that you should become detached from the body. And then And then he actually gives instructions how to perceive the super self in the Gita, in the 13th chapter. He actually gives you an indication how to perceive the super soul, understand the presence of the super soul. And then ultimately he, let me take out the 13th chapter. It's such an interesting chapter because this verse reminded me of the 13th chapter in the Gita. Which is basically Sankhya philosophy. You know, Sankhya means, the word Sankhya means to count. But as far as the context is concerned, it means basically to analyze matter and spirit and understand the difference of the two. We're interested in theistic Sankhya. He says, when a sensible man ceases to see different identities due to different material bodies and sees how beings are expanded everywhere, he attains the Brahman conception. And those within the vision of eternity can see the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. The soul neither does anything nor is entangled. And he ends the chapter with two verses. O son of Bharat, as the sun alone illuminates all this universe, so does the living entity one within the body illuminate the entire body by consciousness, and those who see with eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the knower of the body, and can also understand the process of liberation from bondage of material nature, attain to the supreme goal. So this 13th chapter is very much important in this particular respect. So anyway, that's all I had to say about this verse. So any questions or comments? Yeah.
It may seem redundant. I asked the same question I asked the other day.
Yeah.
There is the concept of being detached from the body because it's troublesome.
Yeah.
Employing the body.
Yeah.
Mind and intelligence and physical body and keeping it fit for service.
Yeah.
So the question I asked the other day was, why bother? Because, you know, Krishna's conducting everything. Ultimately, he's impelling all activity, mental, intellectual, and physical.
Yeah.
Wherein does one apply that minute independence, and why should the person employ that minute independence?
Well, first of all, Krishna wants to see what you're going to do with his property. You know, first of all, we understand, like we say, Krishna is the knower of everybody. He's also the owner of everybody, the proprietor, the enjoyer. Actually, sometimes it's even said that Krishna eats through the mouths of the brahmanas, which is an interesting statement. Of course, we shouldn't say I'm a brahmin, therefore I don't have to offer my food to Krishna because Krishna's enjoying through my mouth. Not really. If you say that, you're not a brahmin. If you think you're a brahmana, you're not a brahmana. Because you're proud. That's not one of the qualities of a brahmana. So, Krishna has given you this body. And he wants to see what you're going to do with it. And so it's a great responsibility. I remember one time, a devotee was driving Srila Prabhupada in a car. And it was just a cheap car, Volkswagen Bug or something. And Prabhupada wiped his hand on the dashboard and, you know, off came some dirt. And Prabhupada said, who do you think this car belongs to? You know, Prabhupada was angry at the devotee because the devotee hadn't properly taken care of the car. So obviously we're not the car in the same way we're not the body, but it's probably more obvious that we're not the car. You know, I'm not my Prius, even though I'm proud of it, even though I decorate it. You know, it's like, me and the Prius are like a bird in the cage right now. Isn't it, you get a new car or something like that? It's like that story, you know, that play we used to put on Sunday, you know, you polish the cage and the bird dies. So I'm polishing the car and the sannyasi dies. So Krishna has given us this body and it's his property. And so it's up to us to take care of it nicely, to protect it, to take the medicine, to use your hearing aids so you can hear with the body. It's not that you neglect the body in the name of Krishna consciousness. Of course, we find many great devotees that become so much immersed in Krishna prema that they are not aware of the needs of the body, but then Krishna does Ananyas chintayanta mam yejana payupasate tesham nityavayuktamam yobhishevahamya. Krishna carries what they lack. But we're not on that stage right now. If we're ignoring the needs of the body, that's just because we're in the mode of ignorance, not because we're transcendental to the whole thing. And, you know, and we're just trying to make Krishna our servant. Just like we have the story of Raghunath Das Goswami. He was chanting on the banks of Radhakund, and, you know, there were tigers there at that time. And then Krishna, in order to protect him, was standing there with a stick or something like that to protect Raghunath Das Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami saw that, and he chastised Raghunath Das Goswami. He said, you're not going to build a kutir? This is ridiculous. You're taking shelter, you're taking service from Krishna. He chastised him for that. And then also there was the story of Raghunath Das Goswami. He was chanting under the sun. You know, the sun was very bright in the summer in Radhakund and Vrindavan. And Sanatana Goswami saw Radharani holding her veil over his head. And he also chastised him with that. He said, you better build a kutir. You know, Krishna's protecting, you're taking service from Krishna, you're taking service from Radharani. Build a kutir, Prabhu, or Maharaj. And so he built a kutir, you know, very small kutir. So that's the point. I mean, Krishna has given us a responsibility. Just like we're given the responsibility of the temple. You know, we were talking to Drishti Prabhu the other day about the temple, how, you know, certain things are really messy on the grounds. And anyway, we have a whole plan for that. And Krishna's given to us, and we don't take care of it. I mean, how is Krishna going to give us a bigger temple, or Krishna is going to be pleased with us? You know, this is Krishna's property. So we have to see in the same way the body is Krishna's property. Is that it? Explain things? Or? And then Krishna gives you intelligence. You know, there's that typical story that Prabhupada tells how someone was depending on Krishna and he drowned because he thought Krishna was gonna save him in a way that was more pleasing to him. Krishna was gonna come on the bank of Garuda and carry him away or something like that while the floodwaters were coming out. Instead, Krishna sent a rowboat to save him, and Krishna sent a helicopter to save him. And when he finally went back to Krishna, Krishna chastised him when he said, why didn't you save me? Krishna said, didn't you see, you foolish rascal? Didn't you see the helicopter and the boat that I sent? You all know the story. That's why I'm not telling it in detail. So, you know, so Krishna's giving us intelligence. Matak smritir yanamapalanam cha. So we should use what Krishna's given properly. That is, the body belongs to Krishna. The intelligence comes from Krishna. The money, whatever money we're getting, comes from Krishna. Has to be taken care of very nicely. Prabhupada said, even with money, if you misspend one farthing, it's sinful. If the money, because it's Lakshmi, it's coming from Krishna. It's Krishna's property. Does that explain things or no? You have further doubts, it looks like. What?
Partially.
Partially. What's the rest of it?
That minute independence comes with inspiration.
Perspiration.
The devil's advocate.
Comes with perspiration, not inspiration.
That story of a priest who was waiting for God's mercy.
Yeah.
It couldn't come about unless he was so stubbornly sitting on the roof.
Yeah.
The story is very useful because of his stubbornness. We can reflect on it. So his behavior, was it impelled by Krishna for him to be stubborn?
No, stubbornness was impelled by his independence, not understanding his... Because we have that independence. It's not that our independence is changed by Krishna. One time when devotee said, I'm praying to Krishna, take away my independence. And that's a philosophical misunderstanding. Because that means I'm praying to Krishna to make me not... a living entity, a jiva soul. Because the nature of the jiva soul is he has that independence. And Krishna does not control our independence at every moment, every second. It's not, first of all, it's not that I decide, you know, I'm surrendering to Krishna and that's it, you know, from now on. No, it's a moment by moment decision. I know in my day, you know, some days I'm surrendering to my computer, some moments. During the morning program, usually I'm 50%. But Later on in the day, you know, the percentage goes to, till we finally go to sleep and then it's 100%. I'm speaking facetiously, I hope. You know, it's throughout the day we're consciously making that choice, isn't it? It's a moment by moment or second by second or lava mantra by lava mantra, you know, instant by instant decision. All right, so on that happy note, happy jolly note, all